Now, making change, any kind of change in our own lives, often comes with some discomfort, some fear, and a lot of work. Our next guest says it's no different when it comes to combating racism. By now, terms like white privilege or white fragility have become buzzwords for many in our society, but our guest says we don't always think deeply about what they mean or how they apply to us. Leila Saad is an author, anti-racism educator, international speaker, and podcast host on topics of race, identity, leadership, personal transformation, and social change. Her new New York Times bestselling book, set up as 28 days of reading with some journaling prompts, is called Me and White Supremacy, How to Combat Racism, Change the World, and Become a Good Ancestor. Leila, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, can you tell us who you started this program and then wrote this book for? Who's the audience you have in mind?
Yeah, so I was speaking to people who, I guess, self-identify as liberal or progressive, definitely people who identified as not racist, colorblind, believe, we're all one race, the human race, and did not see themselves as complicit within white supremacy and racism. That's actually who I wrote the book for.
And you come back to this in the book a couple times, though that audience might think racism is a problem, sure, but it's those other people, those really overt racists I see on TV and rallies and things like that. What is your message for them that this is about them too?
Yeah, so those people, the audience that I'm writing to, were raised to believe that the way to solve racism is to not see color and to try your best not to treat people of other races differently to you. And while that's a very sort of honorable intention, what it ignores is that white supremacy and racism isn't just consciously chosen acts of racism. It's not about, I'm proud to be a racist, I don't like people of other races. It's not just that. That racism and white supremacy specifically is this entire system, institution, history, as well as consciousness that all of us are conditioned into. And so none of us are free of it. None of us are free of the conditioning of white supremacy. And by that, I mean also people who are not white are not free of that conditioning. We just get conditioned in different ways. For people who are white or who look white, the conditioning is you are superior to people of other races. And for those of us who are not white, it's the opposite. It's you're inferior to white people. And then the systems that exist in the institutions reinforce that message by how those two different groups are treated. And so it's not enough to say, I consciously choose not to be racist, because there's this analogy that I haven't come up with, I've seen it used, but this analogy that racism is not the shark, it's the water. It's the water that we're swimming in. And so this work that I do is about helping people to see the water.
You give this day-by-day plan, and you emphasize that this is going to be uncomfortable for most people, probably anybody who takes this step by step. And you try to make the point that discomfort is okay. It's part of what you're looking for. Why is that?
It's necessary, because without discomfort, what it says is that you're engaging in the examination of your unconscious racist thoughts and beliefs in a purely intellectual way. You're purely looking at it as theory or idea or sort of a mental exercise, when racism, being on the receiving end of racism, is a very visceral, emotional, psychological, and physical experience. And so in order to do the work of anti-racism, you actually have to engage with it at the level at which it's felt. Because if you're still saying just in your mind, not connecting to your heart, not connecting to your body, then you still haven't recognized that racism actually is violent, it does kill people, and that and marginalizes people, and that there is a part that which you play in which you are complicit in this system which has caused so much violence. And so the wanting not to kind of feel it is almost like a defense mechanism to not have to feel those feelings, to not have to face that truth. But you have to face that truth in order to be able to understand how to practice anti-racism.
You give a day-by-day plan of kind of confronting a variety of different concepts. I want to touch on a couple of those, and one of them is the idea of white silence. Can you tell us what that is and how people can try to overcome that?
Well, right now we're seeing the opposite of white silence, right? Because we're in a time, finally, when collectively a very large population of white people are actually speaking up in solidarity with Black Lives Matter and in solidarity against racism. And so white silence for all of these years has been part of white supremacy, because while you may not have, you know, used a racial slur or attacked somebody vocally with your, you know, with your words racially, your silence has said, I don't condemn what's happening. Your silence isn't neutral. There is no middle space when we're talking about racism and the violence of white supremacy. You have to say what it is, where it is that you stand. And right now we're seeing businesses and brands and organizations sharing with their audiences and with their clients and customers what their statement is in this moment that we're in. They're sharing a Black Lives Matter statement, or they're making it very clear to their audience, this is where we stand on this. That has never happened before. Never happened before. White silence has been the norm, and it's not the norm anymore.
Yeah, you wrote this book before, obviously, the last couple weeks happened, and we saw these protests spread from Minneapolis and all over the world. Do you feel like this is potentially a significant turning point?
This is, I think it's really important not to undervalue and underestimate how important this time that we're in right now, because we've never seen it before. Not like this. For many of us, we weren't alive during the civil rights movement. And so we have never lived this at this scale in our lifetime. So it's really important not to undervalue and underestimate this moment. But I will also attach to that, that it's not just about the moment. It's about how do things change significantly, systemically, institutionally, as well as relationally, right, and socially. How are things going to change from now on? And that's really up to white people. That's really up to people who have white privilege, because no black person or person of color, indigenous person, created the system. We don't benefit from white supremacy, and we don't collectively have the power to be able to dismantle it. It is white people, people who have white privilege, who have that power. So it really falls on white people to be questioning themselves and saying, what is my responsibility? What is my role right now in this new world? And how can I ensure that the momentum doesn't die down a few weeks from now? How can I make sure that George Floyd's death, the death of so many black people, the emotional labor of so many black people, is not wasted because we returned to a sense of apathy and comfort and ease.
That longer view you're talking about takes me back to the idea, actually it's in the title of your book and throughout the book, the idea of becoming a good ancestor, something you want to do for yourself and are trying to encourage others to do. Talk about what we learn when we try to think of things in that way, being a good ancestor.
Well, we have the world that we have right now, and not the world that was before, where it was the norm. Segregation was the norm. Apartheid was the norm. Racism, racial discrimination at a legal level was the norm. We have this world that we're in right now because of the ancestors who came before us, the sacrifices they made, the work that they did. We have this world now. And we have to remember that we will become ancestors too. So those who come after us deserve a better world than the world we have now too. And so that really drives my work, because doing the work of educating white people about white supremacy is very challenging work. It's very exhausting work. It's not very safe work either, because you are putting yourself in the spotlight to be on the receiving end of racism. So it's hard. And there has to be, for me, something bigger than me, but something bigger than my own fears and bigger than my own, you know, what could happen to me that would continue to drive me to show up every day. And what I'm asking and inviting white people to consider is, what if you are the ancestor who changes the lineage for your family and for your community? What if you said the buck stops with me, that we will no longer have the world that we had before because of choices I've made in my lifetime? And so I really want that to be a calling to everybody.
Leila, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Leila Saad. Her new book is called Me and White Supremacy: How to Combat Racism, Change the World, and Become a Good Ancestor.